afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I am Erin Ryan.
You're my fake husband today?
Yeah, I am.
All gender bending aside.
It's Debbie Bacigalupi, and I'm just so excited to be here. I was born in Redding, right here in Redding, California.
Well, there you have it.
And this is where all, you know, a lot of people around the United States hear about the California wildfires is in this area.
And we're the hub. Yeah. Well, we kind of got overshadowed by the Paradise Fire that was slightly south of us. But, yeah, we've had a lot of natural disaster up here. And let's just be clear.
Natural?
Not according to climate change. So, as much as Jerry Brown wanted to tell us that, no. Gavin wants to tell us that. So this program will be airing in April of 2019, just in case some political things have changed and we air the thing in the future. Our guest today is Tom DeWeese. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. They are the local Kubota and John Deere tractor dealer. They serve Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. They're a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. I think that's implied. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service departments. They've got in-house and road service repairs, and you can find them at 530-226-9226. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller.
I remember when the city of Mount Shasta, that's where I spent the first 3 months of my life. Just recently, they tried to pass legislation where you could not mow your lawns because of global warming.
Oh, well, recently, like in the last week, they changed their garbage service. I was just chatting with a lady yesterday. The city council thought they'd save a bunch of money, and so they changed garbage service. But the garbage service is coming from over an hour away, so you have to have your cans out at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Little snag up there, because now, and everyone told them, they're like, we can't do that, because nobody can put their garbage out the night before because they have bears. And the city council said, oh, no, just, you know, put a rock on your garbage can lid. Yeah, so the next morning they all woke up there. The city of Mount Shasta was covered with garbage because, imagine that, there were bears.
Oh, that city has been
so... there are a lot of bad decisions being made.
That city is so taken over, as in most cities across the United States, which Tom DeWeese...
They are in love with marijuana right now. That's their big thing.
Yeah, and not Tom DeWeese, but he's not in love with marijuana.
No, the city of Mount Shasta.
I was just going to say, Tom DeWeese, who's our guest today, knows...
We tried to tell him he was going to be broad-brushed.
Tom, we promise, we're getting to... This is like the opening for Tom. It's really a good one. Because Tom is hearing all over the United States, city by city, what's happening.
Dumb decisions.
People are calling up Tom saying, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do, Tom? What do I do?
It's the potheads. So Tom's one of the leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy. Oh, imagine this. Back to basics education. I'm not even sure we can define that anymore. And American sovereignty and independence. So we really appreciate him being on with us this afternoon while we chat about pretty much anything you got on your mind and things that you think are a big deal. I listed your website, the American Policy Center. And, gosh, you guys have been doing that for 30 years, leading the fight for American property rights and sovereignty.
And, boy, do you have a wealth of information, Tom DeWeese.
We do. We've got an extensive archive on that website of articles I've written over all those years. And it really gives you a history of where a lot of this stuff comes from and, you know, where it began and who was behind it and so forth. And so you can, you know, spend the rest of, you know, your weekend going through the, you know, the entire thing. But, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. And for a long time, we've been called nutcases, conspiracy theorists. I've been awarded tinfoil hats. The Southern Poverty Law Center has done 4 separate reports on me as one of America's hate groups. And so I have all the credentials to, you know, stand up to this.
See, and in our world, that means you're probably a good guy because, you know, nobody is maligned if they haven't done anything.
Yeah, I actually, when I speak, lots of times I will say, after they've given these wonderful, wonderful, rousing introductions, I will get up and say, I've also been called a domestic terrorist by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I will get the loudest applause.
You get a second standing ovation.
Yeah, <right.
laughs> You know, I heard this term, and I love it, Tom. It's someone said accidentally. She accidentally said it to me. Debbie, you have been called a conspiracy therapist. And she meant to say theorist. And I was like, that's it. I am a conspiracy therapist. I am, because we're out there telling the truth, Tom DeWeeks.
Yeah, I mean, all I ever do is quote them, and then I get labeled the nut. Now, what's that say about what they're saying?
Yeah.
Whose mouth it's coming out of, I guess.
So what's your favorite topic? I mean, there's so many things that lie under United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. And the listeners of We the People Radio are pretty, I would say, versed on what Agenda 21 is, because in this rural part of America, we're experiencing many things.
We've got 10 years of archives. If they're not smart about it, they can get smart.
So what do you think is like the number one issue out there that we as people who love freedom and liberty are facing? And how relevant is it that people like get involved in stopping? Because I have a feeling what you're going to say is not good news. For example,
what makes you think that? Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, when I do speak and I see audiences, you know, if there, say there are three or four of us speaking in the conference. I know you've been there, Debbie. And you begin to look at the audience, and they're looking down, and they can't take any more. All this bad news, bang, 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 bang. And of course, the question always comes up, what do I do? What do I do? And the whole Agenda 21 issue, this whole deal is so vast, so massive, that the average person just can't wrap their head around it. It's every aspect of our lives. It's where we live, how we live, the energy we use. It affects our children. It affects having children, apparently, now. So on and on, people, their jobs and everything else, people can't wrap their head around it. They start down a road to try to fight, and then something else comes up, and they get diverted to that direction. Pretty soon they give up because, well, there's just no hope. And what I try to do is show them there is hope, and I try to bring it down to a very simple means. The truth of the matter is that the sustainable development, smart growth, Agenda 21 policies have a kryptonite. And if this kryptonite is used, it can't be implemented. And that kryptonite is private property protection. If you protect private property rights on the local level, you can stop these policies from being put in place. And so that's what I have focused on the last few years. The book I wrote, Sustainable, that's the focus of it. I can go into all kind of things, population reduction and, you know, the education system and all that, but really, if we focus on that, and we've put a lot of tools together to help people, to do that, and we have begun to see some victories as we've done this.
I think being focused is super important. And just narrow in on, like when you go to city council meetings, right, you could just hone in on the private property issues, right, Tom?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I was in Minnesota last week, a couple weeks ago, and there was a city council lady there, and she was very proud of the fact that they had helped at least diminish some of the comprehensive plan that the community was putting together, and all they did was kind of stall some of the things for about 10 years. But she was really happy. Well, we were able to do that. I mean, talk about hopelessness in your voice. And she was revealing it to me in her gladness. And I said, you really want to shake things up? She said, yeah. I said, put the comprehensive plan in front of the city council and say, ladies and gentlemen, there is no protection of private property rights in this plan. And make them, they'll tell you, oh, yes, there are. You say, well, show me. Where are they? And no, they're not. There's no wording anywhere in any of these plans about protection of private property. And so...
Gosh, that simple. I mean, that simple.
Yeah. And I then have a plan. I've got a document on our website. It's called Resolution for the Protection of Citizens' Property Rights. I said, here's your language. Put it in front of them and say, put this in the plan. And watch their heads explode.
And that's just fun for everybody.
That's right.
All right, we have to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Tom DeWeese, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Here's a little kryptonite for you, Tom.
You call me strong, you call me weak, but still your secrets I will keep. Took for granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand? I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman mind. Kryptonite.
And isn't that about the way of it?
Well,
they want it all.
What shall we do about them? But I'm wondering if that song is about us. Like, what? How do we get him out of the way? How do we get Tom DeWeese out of the way? Because he's making too much sense and he's
causing problems.
He's protecting private property rights. Or is it? Can we turn it on them? What do we do about them?
Exactly. Well, hey Tom, where do you just see the property rights, the private property rights encroachment? It's just everywhere, isn't it? It isn't just in... I mean, sometimes people feel like it's just in their area.
Oh, no, it's every single community. Every single community in the country and the rural areas are under siege at the moment. When you hear your county commissioners, your city councilmen talking about a comprehensive plan and we're just planning for the future and all that sort of thing, that's what they're putting in place. And that is every single area of the country that this is happening. And what's feeding that are the grants from federal agencies, particularly from HUD and the EPA, Department of Transportation. What you have happening in every one of these councils and so forth are non-governmental organizations, NGOs, that many of them helped write the Agenda 21 plan at the international level in 1992. In 1993, Bill Clinton put together the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and the purpose of that council was to take these, what they call a suggestion from Agenda 21. See, it has no enforcement capability. It was just a good suggestion. That's what they tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bill Clinton's council was designed to take that away, to make it official policy. On that council were some of the same NGO organizations that wrote it at the international level, the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, some others, and every agency was represented on there, every federal agency, and there were a whole bunch of corporate representatives there, too. These corporate representatives are able to use their advertising budgets and other policies that they put in place to make these things mainstream. And so that's the three-pronged monster right there from the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that is how it got into every community. So now you have a lot of states then were lobbied by these same NGOs to put legislation together to demand that every community in the state do a comprehensive plan. Now you've got city councilmen sitting there thinking, what the heck is a comprehensive plan? And the same NGOs arrive and they say, don't worry about it. Got it all right here in a box for you. Got the money for you, too. You don't even have to think. Step by step by step, this is how they put it in place.
Make it easy for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've made it just as easy as it can possibly be. And and if a city council would stand up and say, no, we don't want to do this, we're not going to apply for that grant, those NGOs go to the media, they go to the people, and they start to tell the people, your city councilmen are denying you your tax dollars. If you don't take these grants, somebody else will get your money. And there the pressure is on.
I do remember running across that when we were fighting with people you know, Rosa Corey, people Aaron knows, Rosa Corey, mm-hmm. Michael Shaw, the One Bay Area plan, which was to merge 101 cities, 9 counties in the San Francisco Bay Area into the One Bay Area plan, with one plan for all cities, all counties. And I remember under as we fought it, and we were encouraging some of the city council members to not go along with this. They were saying, their complaint, Tom, was, well, wait, if we don't accept the money, like the Federal Highway Transportation Funds that is being used to implement regionalism, then our city is going to have potholes, and the cities around us are going to have their streets fixed.
Yeah, like they would use the money for potholes.
the big lie.
That's like saying they're going to take the lottery money and use it for education.
For schools, right. Yeah, that totally worked. And the pot money.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that.
What they always do.
The pot money is going to help us, too.
Yeah. It is on the level of when the school wants to put together a new bond issue and they want to get everybody to pay, you know, to approve it. And the first thing they say is, well, if we don't have this new bond issue, we're going to have to cut out sports. Now they've triggered every child in the school to go crying to mom and dad, they're going to cut out sports. And mom and dad, the only thing, by the way, in the schools that people actually pay for, you buy tickets to go see the games, and this is the tool that they use. It's always that kind of scare tactic that will get down to your heart the quickest. That's what they do. In reality, 9 times out of 10, the money isn't even used for that.
No, and I think we do see that in California, where our streets are just in, to use a popular term, deplorable condition. While we have the highest gas rates in, I believe, America. I mean, it's just so, you know, Tom and Aaron, it's just,
well,
like,
they're looking at raising the federal gas tax, by the way, just to throw more gas on the fire.
Well, this is another thing that they do.
Before they tax it.
You know, we have used the free enterprise system with fracking. Now, there's a popular term. But it has resulted in gas prices plummeting. So what do these guys do? They plot this way. Oh, gas prices have come down. Now we can tax it back up to where it was. And that, you know, that's immediately what they do. A sustainablest world. What
that's
they're
the
driving
only pothole
towards,
they want to fill.
They want you out of your cars.
Yep.
And the way to get you out of your cars, the most effective way, they won't have the guts to ban cars. The effective way is to tax the gasoline, keep the gasoline up to $8 or $10 a gallon, and then you won't drive. That is the plan. And so when the gas prices started coming down, it panicked them. And the solution is now we'll tax it back up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've effectively, let's face it, you see people driving around in these things. They look like a shoe. They look like a little shoe with windows in it. And you think, are you kidding me? If you got bumped by a Prius, you would be a goner. But, you know, that's how we're going to make it all sustainable. It's like, I don't know.
Well,
everything's on energy.
I took my niece, who had just graduated from Loyola Marymount, to Habitat 9, United Nations Habitat 9, and the conference name was Cities for All, which should be a big clue. Cities for All, that's what the conference
was. What about the people who don't want to live in cities?
And pushing people into cities, as we all know, is their ultimate goal. And, you know, up until that point, my niece, who college graduate, kind of thought as her aunt, me, as Chicken Little. Well, so for her graduation, I took her to Malaysia to go to this United Nations Habitat Conference last February, a year ago, or over a year ago. And finally on the last day, so she's suntanning and stuff at the hotel, but finally on the last day of the conference, she goes with me. And it was perfect, Tom. The one panel discussion she went with me was the one about transportation, which there are many, 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 many panel discussions on transportation, but this one was perfect because they said, and this will be the way we get people out of cars. And my niece loves her car. And so she finally,
for
after
now,
all these years, never seen a presentation I've given, says, oh my gosh, Aunt Debbie, they really do want us out of our cars. And so now, you know, Jessica is not going around like my niece is crazy. She is now going. Okay.
I decided not to wait until after college. I took my niece when she was 10, and we went on a little tour of Northern California. We went over to the coast and up the coast and around through Oregon and back down. And I took her on a government overreach tour. So we drove around and looked at all the ways that the government was making our lives hard, trying to boss us around. Over-regulating. So all the things that, you know, the flashing signs that tell you how fast you're going, really, I needed that because I don't have a speedometer in my car. And it just so happened there was like a whale that had gone up one of the rivers from the ocean when we were over on the coast. And the environmental people, you know, that are good at this, the agency people, were out there poking it with big, long rods.
Oh, to try and get it to
yeah.
turn around?
And we found out when we got home that it died.
Because they poked it too much.
Because they poked it too much.
Because they metal, Tom.
She
That's
was,
what they do.
She's
they
10
metal.
Years old standing on this bridge going, leave the whale alone.
That's what they metal. They have to, they have, you know, you collars on deer.
So you have to pollute the kids when they're a lot younger.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, they should have sat down with the whale, reasoned with it, drawn it a map.
Or just figured it was a whale, right? And it could figure it out itself.
Talk about its feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, like.
Well. It was man messing with the river that caused this. So,
right.
You know, in the beginning, when we started fighting this, and we said one of the plans was to herd people off the rural lands and into the cities, boy, that got me a couple of tinfoil hats from that one, that, you know, what a nutcase I was. And, of course, they're not trying to do that.
No.
And, you know, well, how do you do that? Well, the answer is you make it impossible to live on the land. And they attacked the timber industry and the mining industry, and now they are going full bore after the ranchers and the cattle industry and so forth. The I was in a meeting in Alamogordo, New Mexico, back before 2000, somewhere around there, and all these cowboys showed up in their pickup trucks, and in the back of those pickup trucks were not hay and things like that. They were file cabinets. They had all these files. These guys knew the regulations, hook, line, and sinker, because they had been pushed against the wall. They had nowhere left to go except to push back, and that's what they were doing, and they knew this stuff. They knew exactly what we were saying about what this was all about, because they were learning it firsthand.
Which is just pathetic and depressing. Hey, so got to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Tom DeWeese. You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And it beats like a drum down in New Orleans.
I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just 'cause it's love. I'll find it everyone.
So except for the, you know, lovey-dovey part, that's a fun song. Hey, so, Tom, you're right on the front of your website, your latest article, Green New Deal Reveals the Naked Truth of Agenda 21. We'd like to hear about that and cows.
Yeah, I want to know.
But it's kind of all tied together.
Yeah, as a cattle rancher, Tom, something that I've been interested in that you have been, and I wish I were a part of it, was exposing this whole new global meat measurement that's going on in grocery stores.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm just beginning to get into that issue and learn about it. I was invited to a cattleman's group down in Oklahoma, and I knew a little bit, but when I got down there, I learned a whole lot more, and I've got a lot more to write about that. I've just done a tiny little bit up till now, and I'm amazed by the response I'm getting on it, even for what I've done.
Well, but if you need a co-researcher, You got my number.
I need not to be sick and have longer days. I'll tell you, I've been traveling so much and speaking so much that, you know, it gets me away from the desk, and I've got these things to do. I've had articles coming on that, but literally, the World Wildlife Fund, which is one of the top three radical, most powerful environmental groups in the world, working directly under the UN and its UN environmental program, is literally in control of the American beef industry now. This is an organization that said, in order to save the world, we've got to stop beef consumption. And they have created the Global Sustainable Beef Roundtable. And the way they've done this is they have gotten control of the packing companies, Tyson's, Cargill. There's one called JBS. I forget what the fourth one's called. But these are the guys that actually have the market for beef. They have the grocery stores, the places where it's sold. The cattlemen don't have the market. The cattlemen have the packers. Well, what they have done with this Global Beef Sustainable Roundtable is they have put all kinds of regulations on how the beef is to be raised. Never mind that we've got cattlemen who are, you know, fifth generation doing this, who've provided all these years, and the United States has the highest quality of beef in the world. Never mind any of that. These guys who live in high rises in New York City and call themselves environmentalists know much better. And so they put these rules and regulations on, and if a cattleman does not follow those rules, is not certified by these packers, then they will not take their product. And we are seeing all kinds of cattlemen put out of business doing this. Now, there was a new packer that was started by some people who were in support of the cattlemen, and I was told they put together just the highest quality operation they could do, and were going to offer a much stronger, much better product. And what did these packers like Cargill and Tyson's do? They lowered their prices to the point where no one could compete, and they put these guys out of business. So the cattlemen are an absolute prisoner of this. And what's amazing, you know, part of the power behind all this is the animal rights movement that keeps painting this picture of, you know, be vegan, don't eat meat, you know, and that sort of thing. And they'll run these photographs of, you've seen the pictures of like the chickens that are in these chicken farms where they never touch the ground. They are just forced as slaves to produce those eggs, and the same kind of thing, you know, with the cattle and so forth. Well, the truth of the matter is, these policies are putting the real cattlemen out of business, the independent guys, the ones who love their you know, what they do, and they take good care of their cattle.
And cattlemen. We got to take care of them, too.
Yeah, right. And you know, they're pushing them into these factory farms. This is where the horror takes place, where nobody cares about the animal.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, this is a convoluted thing about it. And but when you have an organization who is behind all this that has said we've got to stop beef consumption to save the planet, and they're making this decision. I ask one of the gentlemen, you may know him, Debbie Bill Bullard, on, you know, why are the cattlemen allowing this to happen?
Mm-hmm.
The cattlemen's associations are going along with this.
Yes.
And he said that they have been beaten up so badly by the environmentalists and the animal rights people that they thought, okay, if we put this word sustainable in there, how bad can that be? That'll be a pressure valve and get them off our back. They don't understand the goal is to put them out of business. They have already taken control of the chicken industry, the poultry industry. They've already taken control of the pork industry. Tyson's ships all of its chickens to China to be processed. Now, what are we starting to hear in the news? You're hearing a lot about people getting sick eating chicken. Why? because it's coming from China. And, you know, this is what we deal with. This is one of the ploys to get you to stop eating these products. People are getting sick from that. We better not do that.
Yep.
And the first thing they did was to start this process was to take the sticker, the labeling of nation of origin off the labeling so that we don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah. You know, I can tell you that we just had to work our cows this weekend, and we have old cows. We don't take our cows being the mom, to market. They're born on our ranch, and they usually die on our ranch, our cows, the mom cows. And so over the last couple of days, you might have seen a couple of dead cows on our ranch. And somebody could easily drive by. And these cows live, you know, for 16 years.
Your
which
video
is
fodder.
16, 17 years. These cows are old. They're like over 100 years old. But they're surviving for so long because we take care of our animals. We love our animals. We take care of our land. But you know what? Anybody could come by and take pictures and say, look how these cattle ranchers are operating. Their cows are dead. Without doing any further investigation, and they could, and this happens all over, Tom, and they're even using drones now to, you know, spy.
Well, look what they did. They overran those people in England, and with the piglets, remember? They hugged they grabbed all the little piglets and put them with the wrong moms, and so a bunch of them got eaten, and they trampled other ones, and they were animal rights activists there to save the piglets, but a whole bunch of them died.
Well, the animal rights movement is the biggest con in the entire sphere of what we're talking about here.
And so connected, sorry, Tom, so connected, like Humane Society of the United States, so connected to lobbying for politicians.
Yeah, Humane Society of the U.S. has absolutely no animal shelters. They do absolutely nothing to you know, improve the life of animals and so forth. What they do is confiscate animals of by other people, and then they sell them. This is one of the major places they make money. They are thieves. They sell the animals from that they confiscate, and they move in and get the you know, the city dog catcher and, you know, the city government to go along with them, and you know, the judges are in their pocket and everything else. These are the biggest crooks there are, and of course PETA has one animal shelter, and that has the highest kill rate of any animal shelter in America. So this is your animal rights movement. And
on your site, do you have some research on that people can go to?
We've done some stories on there. My vice president, Kathleen Marcourt, originally had an organization called Putting People First. It was the first organization ever started against the animal rights movement. And let me tell you, she had to be armed all the time. She had to teach her kids to look under the car before they started it.
Yeah.
You know, things like they were in danger all the time.
Well, they always
by the
say that
animal
the,
rights movement.
The environmentalists that go completely wacko move over to over to animal rights.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got a few things, I think, on there, but she's done quite a bit, and she has a book that she wrote back at that time called Animal Scam, and we have that available as well.
Well, I can't wait for your roundtable, Global Beef Roundtable Sustainable. I can't even remember the whole name because it makes me sick to my stomach. But I know that every time I go to a store like Whole Foods, it's right smack. You know, they've got levels to 4, I think, of how sustainable that food is.
Mm. That's the first thing I won't buy. It's more expensive, and they try to make sustainable and organic is kind of the same thing, and it's not. And it's a destruction of industries and so forth. I do want to talk about the Green New Deal, but I want to share the raw
green gangrene ugly old deal. It's not new. It's old.
Yeah. But let me share two quotes with you. I'm talking about private property as being the center of this whole thing. We all know a New York City Mayor, William de Blasio, And, you know, the guy is an absolute communist. Just no question about it. If you're in New York City, get out now while you still can. But he made this comment to New York Magazine last year in an interview. He said, "What's been hardest is the way our legal system is structured to favor private property. I think people all over the city of every background would like to have the city government be able to determine which building goes where, how high it will be, who gets to live in it, what the rents shall be." There you have it. It is exactly where they're headed with this.
Yeah.
And what they're doing with rent control and so forth, they're moving to get rid of private landlords, and the goal is to have all housing be government housing. The attack on in Minneapolis and other places around the country, in Oregon, on zoning for single-family homes. Now they're calling it racist to have a single-family home because these people are segregating themselves from the rest of the population. That's one of the things they do. Now, here is the clicker to this whole thing. We found this quote quite by accident one day. This is a quote written in 1968 by an architect. And now, you know, if you go to these city council meetings and stuff, you'll hear them talking about their comprehensive plan, and they'll use these terms. You know, well, we can't have chaotic growth. We need to have an organized system to prepare for the future.
Of course,
right? We hear that all the time. Well, here is this quote. It says, "The chaotic growth of cities will be replaced by a dynamic system of urban settlement. The region is formed by an economic interdependence of its development from the industrial complex to the industrial region. The region has a single system of transportation, a centralized administration, and a united system of education and research."
Welcome to the 21st century.
Written in 1968 by Alexei Gutanov, a Soviet Russian writing in a book entitled The Ideal Communist City.
Oh, wow.
Yep. That is exactly where we're headed with this. It's what it's about, and where they, you know, what they plan. One of the good things about what's happening now, I can't say good, that's not the right word to use for it, but I'm finding it a positive force for us. After all these years of them using this language that was so innocent sounding and hidden the truth of what they were saying, and of course guys like myself and others were interpreting what those innocent sounding words meant, and we're getting awarded the tinfoil hats, they have gotten so arrogant in what they're doing. I think it's a combination of arrogant and fear. They're arrogant because they've moved so forward with it. They're afraid because people are starting to catch on. But they have gotten very open about what they're talking about.
That's actually become kind of helpful.
Yeah, I have.
Hold on 5 seconds, Tom. We've got to take a really quick break here. We're a teeny bit late, but I had this song I just couldn't pass up that... We were just having trouble getting
you. It's dedicated to you.
It's all you.
So
you're an inspiration.
It.
All right. Sing it, Weird Al. Or not. Oh, yeah.
Just eat it. Don't want to argue. I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean off your plate. So eat it. Don't you tell me you're full. Just eat it.
Every breath you take, every move you make.
pick up where we left off when you were so unceremoniously gone.
I'm guessing like you, Tom. So we have Tom DeWeese, an amazing private property rights defender for over 30 years. The American Policy Center is where you can go. Extraordinary information on everything from Agenda 21 to water rights, private property rights. You know, you name it. Tom is just a master at putting together these big deals and that are, you know, these big agendas and putting it down to a simpler, like, I hate to use the term dumbing it down, but I'm just going to say dumb it down to where the average person can actually get what is the agenda and how it's impacting you and your everyday life. And Tom, I'm guessing, like you, like me, I was so excited that Alexandria O'Communist came out with this thing called the New Green Deal.
Well, when I was speaking in Minnesota a couple weeks ago, I started each of my talks telling the audience that I was really excited because this young lady has been able to do more to get people to start talking about and understanding the horrors of Agenda 21. She's done more in 2 months' time than I've done in 27 years, and I'm so grateful for her. And what I wanted to do was award her a copter beanie that take the tinfoil off my hat and put on hers, and it's copter beanie because, well, it is environmentally correct because it is wind-powered with a little propeller on top. And so I'm hoping to present her with this award sometime soon, because she has made it so much easier now. The truth of the matter is that going to a city council today, instead of immediately getting in and talking about Agenda 21, saying the words Green New Deal, now they can't say this is a something we made up, a conspiracy theory. It's a a congressional bill, and so it's right there. So that's made it a little bit easier. And the thing is that every single thing in this in the Green New Deal is from Agenda 21. There's nothing new in there. They've just gone into a little more detail. But I'll tell you something that I'm very concerned about. I see. After that vote in the Senate the other day, 57 to nothing, a whole bunch of Republicans and even some conservative groups in D.C. and stuff that are dancing around saying, ha, 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 take that, AOC. Look what we did to your Green New Deal. Ha, ha, ha. And they're celebrating 57 to nothing. Well, I think they've been played, because what they did with this, and she certainly is not the person who wrote this thing up. She's a tool, and they know she's a tool, and they got her in there to be a tool. But what they did was a classic maneuver in negotiation. They took a plan and put it so far radical, so far down the road, and the other side says, oh my goodness, no, we can't do all that. We can do this. Bingo.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's starting to happen. I don't have the name in front of me now, but there is a Republican senator who is now introducing the Green New Deal light.
Yeah, you know,
victory.
And you're just reconfirming what a guest, Mark Morano, was talking about, which there are, he named three different Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Mitt Romney, and he couldn't remember the other Republican, who are coming up with a Green New Deal light plan.
There you go. Yep.
Of course.
Yeah. So this is, they've been played. This is what happens all the time. And one of the things that I have been furious about for years, I've kept my mouth shut a lot about it. I don't want to shut any doors. But there are organizations, established organizations in Washington that are working on the climate change issues and so forth. They will not say the words Agenda 21.
Yeah.
If they had done that, in 1992, we could have killed this.
Yep.
If they had attacked it and said what it was really about. Instead, they let people like me carry the burden.
Yeah.
And I lost the ability to be on certain stages and being in certain publications and so forth because I'm the nutcase talking about this. And it's interesting that Senator from Utah...
Mike Lee.
Mike Lee, thank you. How can I forget three words, three letters? Anyway, you know, he made a lot of headlines making a speech on the floor of the Senate ridiculing the Green New Deal, making real fun of it.
Uh-huh.
If a senator had done that in 1992 against Agenda 21, we could have killed it.
Well,
instead,
you know,
they all played the game.
It's like Joni Ernst. Remember when she was running for senator?
Oh, yeah.
It was a Tea Party candidate who was talking about Agenda 21. And after Obama's, when they do their big speech, their State of the Union.
Yeah,
State of the Union.
She had a chance to rebuttal. And what did she talk about? Bread bags on her feet as she walked to school. Instead of having the world stage and talking about radical environmentalism, we heard about her being a poor farmer with bread bags on her feet as she walked to school.
I lived in West Hartford, Connecticut, and I put bread bags on our feet. We all did, because that's how you kept your boots from leaking. You did bread bags, socks. Everyone knows
but,
that.
You know, Tom, I hear your frustration, and there's so many opportunities to expose it. Right now, they could be saying, hey, you guys, this is no new deal. Nancy Pelosi in 1992 created H. Conrad 353, which, you know, was the bill to implement Agenda 21 in her own words, in her pretty little red dress. That's why I call her the woman in the pretty little red dress. Which is that video, as you know, Tom and Aaron, is still on C-SPAN.
On my website.
Your website. So people go to Tom's
AmericanPolicy.org, by the way.
Right now, and check out that video.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they introduced Agenda 21, you know, there were 50,000 delegates at this conference in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. 50,000, including almost every world head of state, George H.W. Bush, for one. And, I mean, that is not a picnic where we all got together just to enjoy ourselves. They had a purpose. And you know, there were diplomats, there were, and these NGO organizations, 50,000 of them. And when they announced this with great pride, with great excitement, they said, this is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society.
Hello.
Think about
that. Yeah, that should be a massive heads up for people.
Yeah, I use it all the time, but, you know, that's what it was. And later, to really describe what they meant by this, they put this out. The UN put this out. It said, effective execution of Agenda 21 will require a profound reorientation of all human society unlike anything the world has ever experienced.
Wow.
You know, these are their
and
words.
On that note, our guest has been Tom DeWeese with the American Policy Center. Tom, we have run out of time. Can you believe it?
What a bummer.
That's why we do a two-hour show.
American
so if you'll
Policy
have to come back
Center.
On, we'll just yammer on forever.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for your work.
You can find all the information at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll have the archive up later on today. Thanks so much,
Tom.
Amazing
hero.
Thank you.
All right. The transmissions will resume. I try to push, try to keep us all down, down, and hold that. But we will never see the truth around. Another promise, another scene, another a package like to keep us trapped in greed. All a green bounce wrapped around our minds, an endless red tape to keep the truth confined.
Debbie Bacigalupi.
Bill is on, we're going to have Bill on assignment. That's a story. Bill's on assignment today.
I guess you'll have to listen in next week to find out where he went.
Find out where Bill went. Which means I'm doing the sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is your local Kubota and John Deere dealer serving Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. They're a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service departments, and you can find Bill there. See, Bill does never say that in the commercial, but you can find Bill there. You can reach them at 530-226-9226, and they are located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller.
You know you're in rural America when they're selling tractors.
Exactly. Tractors, boats, We're right by a 25 lake that's 25 miles long and a mountain that's 14,000 feet high. So, you know, might as well get out and do some stuff.
Like all the equipment that Alexandria O-Communist would love to get rid of.
Pretty much. We've got it all. So go get it serviced at Team Power. Your mower blades need sharpening. I know that already. And for heaven's sakes, cut the tall grass so we can stop having all these fires. And that's mostly all. So our guest today...
I'm so excited.
That's why Debbie's here. Our guest today is Mark Morano. He is the CFACT Director of Communications, but he founded ClimateDepot.com. He's the man at ClimateDepot.com.
And you've got to go there. You got to go to that website.
Book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. And the daily cause or coast or whatever they are, the daily KOS. That's a pretty good review, Mark. Actually, it just says evil personified.
Yeah. I call it the. Sorry.
So obviously, you must be our new best friend.
I call it the golden book of golden nuggets, and it is, and it's available on Audible too. You have to get this book. I listened to it even coming down from the ranch yesterday. I was listening to his book.
Why? She was ready to talk to you yesterday.
Oh my gosh! I'm always ready to talk to this guy.
So, bottom line is, we've linked that on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. And we've got his website on there, ClimateDepot.com. And so now it's all you, Mark.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Debbie. Debbie, good to talk to you again. Thank you for the promotion.
Love you. Easy for me to say. Last night in your Santa suit, giving coal to the UN.
Yes, that's right. Debbie
or Greenpeace.
That was at the Poland UN Climate Summit, and Greenpeace was trying to ban all coal, which obviously didn't go over too well in Poland, because the Polish hosts had a whole tribute to Poland at the entrance of the UN Climate Conference there, so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, needless to say, Greenpeace wasn't receptive to Santa Claus giving them lumps of coal. They were some people got upset. Some of them were gracious about it, but we had a lot of fun with that stunt.
Well, you know, and I just found it so hypocritical that here you walk into the building where they were across from where the United Nations meeting was, and I mean, there's a full wall bar with alcohol from the top of the ceiling all the way down, and they've got these.
I'm sure they made it with solar.
These plushy cushions, you know, those bean bags that people are sitting on, and they've got this stage and like all
probably filled with hemp.
Amazing. All the electricity, the energy that they needed, the resources that they needed from planet Earth to put off their event. But
nobody else.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Mark. I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, no, she's right, and Debbie knows this. So she's a veteran as well as I am of all these UN climate summits, and they've actually done analysis. You know, when they have, they're usually a lot of the times they're temporary structures. They have diesel generators out there. They're like little mini cities themselves, and when you add in all the private jets and all the Hollywood celebrities and the dignitaries and the foreign leaders that fly into these, they use more energy than like dozens of African nations do in a year just for the two-week conference that they have here. And the one I went to in Johannesburg, South Africa years ago, I think it was the UK Daily Mail, actually did a big expose about all the chefs that they had flown in, and they were preparing champagne, caviar for the world leaders as they sat around and talked about, you know, global poverty and how they were going to solve it with renewable energy and, you know, UN central planning somehow. So these conferences are a sham, and they're one of the reasons climate scientists love the global warming establishment. I mean, when you're a scientist, these are what you get to go to. You know, you get to fly around, and it's not just the ones Debbie and I have been to, not just these big UN climate summits. They have multiple summits throughout the year in all kinds of locations, from Cancun, South America, Africa. They have several lead-up meetings to that where they do reports and other meetings and mission targets and all kinds of things. So this is just a massive United Nations gravy train. And sadly, and I'll end on a down note here, President Trump's administration hasn't done anything really about that. In terms, they have pulled us out or announced the intent to pull out, but they still sent a delegation, and we went to the their meeting at this last UN climate conference in Poland. And the U.S. was very tepid. They were extolling the virtues of fossil fuels, but they totally sidestepped any criticism or any skeptical stance on science. But unfortunately, Donald Trump's administration still rubber stamping the U.N., still funding it. The budget that Donald Trump had the first year was fantastic, massive cuts to EPA, but everything was dead on arrival with the GOP Congress. But unfortunately, that still goes on. And so to expand on that just 1 minute here, the global warming movement right now, we are at a serious, serious crossroads. We haven't been this at a crossroads since Al Gore's film first came out in 2007. Right now, President Trump's administration is facing multiple legal challenges on the global warming front. Kids lawsuits, James Hansen, all other kinds of lawsuits against oil companies. The problem is, because of George W. Bush administration, and because thus far President Trump hasn't reversed anything yet through the executive order or challenged it in the courts, what stands as the accepted science is the United Nations ridiculous climate reports that won the Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore in 2007, the UN IPCC reports, and the National Climate Assessment, which the Trump administration, the abomination the Trump administration allowed to go through. This was a big federal report. The media went nuts. Trump's own scientists disagree with him on global warming more dire. The report was a joke. It was written, coordinated by Andrew Light, Obama's chief UN Paris negotiator, a whole over. It was written, the scientists were Donald Wobbles and Catherine Hayhoe, two activists from the Union of Concerned Scientists. The report read like an environmental press release because it was written by environmental activists in Obama holdovers, but the Trump administration did nothing. So here's the problem. Scientifically, the United States government fully and only recognized National Climate Assessment has been accepted and the UN reports have been accepted. So these federal judges, I can't blame them. When they get these reports, if they're going by federal statutes, they're looking at, the UN reports, National Climate Assessment. They have to start thinking global warming is a threat because there's been no pushback. And sadly, the EPA doesn't look like it's going to do anything. Our greatest hope, I'll end on hope here, then I'll let you guys ask questions. But our greatest hope right now in the climate movement is the Presidential Climate Commission that potentially will be headed by Dr. Will Happer, Princeton physicist, who said Earth is in a CO2 famine right now and has compared the demonization of carbon dioxide to the way Germany treated a certain ethnic group. I'll try not to go too far into Godwin's law here, where people get, you don't want to make Nazi analogies, but this is the most significant. This is the most significant thing that could happen in the climate debate. We are on the cusp of it. We just have to make sure it actually goes through and that no one talks President Trump out of it. So we need this presidential commission that will re-examine the science of the United Nations, push back the National Climate Assessment, and that will set the stage for a review of the CO2 endangerment finding, the horrible judgment back in 2007 that the Supreme Court ruled carbon dioxide was a pollutant and could thus be regulated under the Clean Air Act. This presidential commission, all our hopes hinge on this, because otherwise, the fantastic nature of everything President Trump has done, pulling us out of Paris, reversing Obama's EPA regs, bunch of great energy stuff, making the United States the greatest energy provider in the world, could all be undone if the Democrats win in 2020, because we need to get on record federal commission that the science is wrong to give our legislative regulatory bodies a real clear path, and that's what this commission could potentially represent, and we have to make this happen. So all eyes are on this presidential commission. That's the only thing that matters in the climate debate at the moment in terms of having the most massive impact. So I'm off my soapbox.
Oh, that was awesome. We liked the soapbox.
We loved it.
That's why we do this show. We find people who have a good soapbox, and then we just like let them come on because we're just listening. Let's take a really quick break here so we don't have to cut off the next soapbox rant. You have like a couple of minutes to think that over. What that will be. Oh, you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back April 21st of this year.
I'd love to
and
know.
Then some.
Yeah. You know, we need more Mark Moranos for sure. And, you know, Mark, I have a question for you. We're with Mark Morano on We the People Radio. I'm Debbie Bocciacalippi. I'm just taking over your show here, Aaron.
Go ahead and do it. With Bill Aaron just sits Lyon. Over there and doesn't say anything.
And our guest is Mark Morano. He wrote a fabulous book. I've listened to it several times now on Audible. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. You could go to CFAC.org and order the book from there. And, of course, it's available on Amazon. And really, you know what? These people who want global warming and want to control our lives don't want you to read this book because it's the golden book of golden nuggets. And it has so many like great things to combat, like the 97%. And of scientists say, and the seas are rising.
Yeah, the whole back. That's like little piggy snouts, which is classic. The world is spending nearly $1 billion a day to prevent global warming. Brilliant. I'm sure that money couldn't be used better somewhere else. A UN scientist has said that 90% consensus on global warming was pulled from thin air.
I mean, I'm not kidding. You go through this book, and it talks about the grant money. It talks about Al Gore. I mean, it's a thick book, but, you know, it's an easy read, and it's scientifically based on, you know, it's got some great, great. But anyway, Mark, I want to know, you were just talking about that our only hope, and I get it because I see what's going on out there and just the propaganda. Our only hope is this commission that is headed by Dr. Will Happer, who is, I believe he went to Yale. He's a Yale professor. But how do people get involved, Mark, to make a difference? Like, how does the average listener, is there anything we could do to help promote this commission?
Yeah, well, one of the things that have been going on, there's been the whole series of scientists, public policy leaders urging the White House, who've signed a public letter, urging them to go forward with this. Dr. Patrick Moore, this is interesting. Now, you say he's coming on, or you've already had him on? He's coming on in a couple of days, or when?
Patrick Moore, he will be coming on.
Co-founder.
Yeah, he'll be on next week.
Okay, the co-founder of Greenpeace has gone on Fox News, touted the whole concept of the climate science being fake news, and also said he was in town to meet with Dr. Happer of this climate commission. This caused all hell to break loose. To give you an idea how important this commission is, immediately, first of all, President Trump tweeted about Patrick Moore on Fox and Friends that day, within the hour or the half hour of him being on. This caused massive media heartache. It caused climate people like Michael Mann to have heart attacks. People were going bonkers. The president is endorsing a climate denier, etc. So a couple things went into play immediately. First of all, Michael Mann went to Newsweek and did a rebuttal to Patrick Moore's claim that global warming is fake science. And
as an aside, real quick, Michael Mann is not our friend, guys.
So yes, sorry about that. Michael Mann is a UN scientist and the inventor of this fraudulent hockey stick temperature graph, which said temperatures were flat until the 20th century when mankind took over control of the climate, essentially. But he went, the climate activists, the inner circle of the UN scientists, they went nuts. So he did a big op-ed at Newsweek, which I then did a point-by-point rebuttal to Michael Mann, and I used all the peer-reviewed sources, data, graphs, and even more, and Michael Mann tried to, missed my thing, but he had some fun with it, saying that, we must have really struck a nerve with the deniers. But anyway, the key thing that happened was before Patrick Moore went on Fox and Friends and before President Trump tweeted that climate was fake news, quoting Patrick Moore, climate change is fake news, he was one of the founders of Greenpeace. In fact, you guys said that earlier, founders and co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google and Greenpeace itself. But what happened was, within a day or two of him appearing on Fox News, Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, he was digitally erased in what Patrick Moore called tech tyranny. And I did a whole exclusive report likening it back to how Joseph Stalin, in his days as the grand Soviet leader, would wipe away commissars who were no longer in favor of the party. So I have photos of Stalin with his old comrades, and then they'd fall out of favor with the party, do something that he considered disgraceful or dissent, and they'd be airbrushed out of photos. Google did the exact same thing, and I have the screen captures. Patrick Moore, before Donald Trump retweeted him, and Patrick Moore after. He was a Greenpeace co-founder, according to Google. 2 days later, he was nowhere to be found. He was taken off Greenpeace. Now, the only problem with this, and there's no accountability for Google, they won't even listen to us, but the only problem with that is Greenpeace's own websites, according to the Wayback Machine, as recent as 2005, 2007, listed Patrick Moore as one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, including his photo, bio, and here's a little interesting tidbit. Among all the co-founders of Greenpeace, all the founding members, Patrick Moore was the only PhD scientist among them. So not only, so Greenpeace had all this, and I have the screen capture shots. So this story went huge. And actually, Fox News followed up on this. I did a whole segment with them on this story. But this gives you an idea of the threat. Patrick Moore comes to Washington, D.C. to meet with Will Happer about this presidential commission as part of the group that, Will Happer formed, the CO2 Coalition. You could ask Patrick Moore all about this. It's an incredible story. He came as a co-founder of Greenpeace within 24 hours after the taping and President Trump touting Patrick Moore. He's no longer a co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google. And so anyone doing research on Google now, if you're looking up founders of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore's name isn't going to come up because Greenpeace has scrubbed their website. Google scrubbed the website. The only hope we have right now in terms of digital freedom is the Wayback Machine, the internet search engine. I don't know how much longer they can last because I have a feeling they're going to be shut down. They can't keep doing what they're doing. They're making it hard for Google to whitewash history.
I agree. And if you go to Wikipedia, I love this, Mark. If you go to Wikipedia, you could see, I did the other day, took screenshots from 2018, where in the, I believe it's the history section of Wikipedia, one of the tabs, there's many tabs, more than just the one that pops up on your computer, and you can go back and compare from then to now the changes that they made. So they, guys, take screenshots of these things, this evidence down the road that these guys are messing with data.
Well, I use DuckDuckGo. .com to search it, and I put in Patrick Moore Greenpeace, and just a little blurb you can click on from the Greenpeace website says Patrick Moore did not found Greenpeace. He frequently
himself. He was one of the founding members, and that's the exact phrase from the Greenpeace screenshot. So yeah, he wasn't the sole founder, but he was among the founding members of Greenpeace, recognized by Greenpeace for nearly three and a half decades before they started erasing their history because they didn't like the dissent of Patrick Moore from their message and narrative.
Well, there's even a New York Times article, and I think it was from the 1980s or 1990s or whatever. I can't remember. I might be way off that, but it's on my Facebook for those of you who are on my Facebook.
It was some decade previous to now.
Yeah, where he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about Greenpeace as the co-founder, as one of the co-founders. So, this is about erasing history, isn't it? It's about rewriting history, as Michelle Obama had warned us, that we must rewrite history.
Yes, and the key, even beyond this, this is what the tactics are willing to go to, but this gives you an idea of the threat. And here's, let me just go back to this presidential commission again. This presidential commission on climate change, headed by Dr. Will Happer, could, from Princeton University, I think he said Yale, but he's from Princeton University. He may have actually undergrad at Yale, I can't remember now, but he's from Princeton. This would be the first official United States government dissent on man-made climate change since the whole thing began. And the whole thing began, obviously, with our consent in 1988 with the UN IPCC formation, and then in earnest in 1992 with the Rio Earth Summit, which set up the framework for the whole UN climate summits that were annual, and it was just a travesty of George H.W. Bush administration, the first George Bush. So this is why they're so threatened. This is why Michael Mann, the climate activist scientist, went immediately and did a big high profile attack on Patrick Moore and Will Happer at Newsweek. And here's the interesting thing: and one of my favorite attacks on Will Happer is they say, "Oh, well, he isn't a climate scientist, so therefore he has no business making any comments like this." And I had a lot of fun with this because not only is Will Happer have 200 peer-reviewed scientific studies, but he is actually one of the foremost experts on the greenhouse gas effect. And I actually quote another Harvard physicist who explains that Will Happer's research is actually the leading expert on the greenhouse effect. Something that Michael Mann is a guy who goes around and he'll say things like, and I have these in my report, my big report at Climate Depot on him. He'll say things like, if you want to know what's happening with global warming, look out your living room window. He says the most absolutely, not just scientifically moronic things, but just moronic things you can imagine. And we're going to have to relocate major cities. So he made that claim. And so we did all the documentation. And Michael Mann basically went silent. He didn't respond to this. This was heard far and wide. Associated Press, the same week as this all happening, came out and they claimed to have found definitive evidence of man-made global warming, and it was in the U.S. temperature records, how we have more, the last 20 years we have more record highs than lows, and therefore that's proof of the fingerprint of carbon dioxide. And then, of course, I interviewed about five or six climate scientists, including Dr. John Christie, the climatologist, used to be with NASA, and it turns out, had AP used a 100-year time scale, there was much hotter days back in the 1930s and previous times, and there's actually no trend that the AP was trying to show that they cherry-picked a time frame. So there's going to be a lot of more and more alarmist garbage coming up as this presidential commission forms. And apparently, I'm hearing inside information for you guys, Aaron. I'm hearing that they've already picked the numbers, they picked the members, the scientists are set. We just don't know the timeline, and we don't know, you know, exactly when this is going to begin. And again, that's all subject to President Trump could get pressure inside Washington to kill it. But keep in mind, President Trump has had some great members. The best EPA administrator, of course, was Scott Pruitt, who has been just probably the most effective campaign. I think he was only in office like a year and a half. Probably the most effective cabinet member.
Michael Flynn lasted, 2 weeks? I think he was assassinated quicker than anybody by these guys. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Mark Morano, who is the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, and you can find him at climatedepot.com.
Must get book.
Just the back is worth getting. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Listening to an encore presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back April 21st of this year.
Maybe it's a bad thing. You ever love someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break into?
They did a bad thing.
Chris Isaak knew it first. Okay, so we still want to know, Mark, to support the commission, the president's commission, is there anything, I mean, people can always send letters and that kind of thing, but is there something, are you guys coordinating anything through like CFACT or through Climate Depot or any of that, that people could jump in on?
Yes, and one of the things we're doing, I was able to testify at the congressional hearing from the Congressional Western Caucus House Natural Resource Committee. Actually, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was scheduled to testify there, but there's a great coalition of congressmen in the House, a lot of them from the western area, but some of them actually from the East Coast. And we're thinking that we're doing a massive talking points document, which we'll be releasing, you know, probably in the next 3 weeks, and then we're looking to hold some kind of congressional briefing on this. And here's the key we're trying to do is show, first of all, profile all the scientists who dissent. As you know from reading the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, it wasn't hard. I mean, I just reached out to these scientists, and they're all there with unbelievable credentials. One of my favorites, Dr. Robert Gegengag, University of Pennsylvania, hundreds of peer-reviewed studies, been on almost every continent, and he's from a very left-wing school, and he even loves Al Gore, but he couldn't believe it when he saw his film. And I profile the scientists, so I'm thinking actually going to do a talking points report that's going to not just profile the scientists, but on every issue from A to Z, very brief sort of paragraph responses with footnotes. And we want to get this information. One of the things we need to do, that's the most important, is to make people comfortable to challenge climate claims. Now, the problem is many political leaders, and including, I include Trump administration officials in this. Well, first of all, he had some stinkers in there, like Rex Tillerson, and he had he was probably the worst. And he's got, frankly, he's got Rick Perry. You may be here surprised to hear me say that, but actually on Climate Depot, been running stories, not by me, but by others, calling for the resignation of Rick Perry. Here's a guy who squandered 2 years at the Energy Department, essentially has done nothing. He's not been under attack. He's got no media. He's just sort of a placeholder there. The only thing he has said is he's supported, he and Al Gore have the same goals and they're working together. He no longer challenges global warming. He's just trying to work with everyone. Kumbaya. It's really a travesty as people are trying to reverse some of these Energy Star restrictions. I've even met with his top levels of his staff and they just seemed disinterested in doing anything. So he's had some stinkers. So Donald Trump's going to get nothing from official Washington. He's going to say, don't do it. This is what's happened since the beginning of the whole climate. Don't deal with it. Oh, it's not an issue. Just let it go. We don't want to be against science. It's a no-winning issue for you. But hopefully Trump will rise above that and make this happen. But one of the things we need to do is make politicians comfortable, Republican politicians comfortable to challenge the science. It's hard. And you have now a coalition led by Mitt Romney, some Republican House members, Lindsey Graham, and what was the other Republican senator? There's one who are essentially coming up with a new Green Deal light. They're going to accept most of the scientific premises of AOC and the Green New Deal, but they're going to come up with market-driven solutions, in quotes. Now, keep in mind, what's the biggest market-driven solution? That's been a carbon tax historically, and a bunch of liberal Republicans have been pushing that now for several years. So back to your question, what can people do? They need to speak out. They need to get their congressmen comfortable at town halls, everywhere else. We need to support this commission because it would give Trump administration cabinet members, the president himself, congressmen who want to oppose, give them scientific cover. That is why we need to do it. Of course, that's not a great sell. You don't want to announce that publicly because that's the effect it would have, though, is give them cover. But you need politicians to support this publicly. So anything we can do in the public to support it. Because to think that the United Nations and National Climate Assessment are speaking to the United States government, that is a joke from beginning to end. I've done so many reports on both. In fact, I have a whole chapter just on the UN and all the UN scientists who turned against it. And the National Climate Assessment, these are based on government agencies that are more than, some of them 100% dependent on federal funding, and not just government agencies, but things like the National Academy of Sciences, NAS, and other groups. These groups who support these groups, they support these climate assessments, have to, because they're getting their money from the government, and they will do what the government dictates. And in this case, Trump administration had nothing to do with the report. It was commissioned and with Obama holdovers, and they didn't want to be against science or seen as censorship. They knew it was a trap, so they let it go by, which I don't agree with, but I can understand why they did it. So they essentially, every department head, including EPA Energy, rubber stamped that report. So that's got to be reversed. So it's, I guess I don't have a great answer on how the public can do this other than to speak out and to urge their congressmen to speak out. We just have, it all comes down to Donald Trump at this point. President Trump has to pull the trigger on this, and hopefully he won't get distracted or listen to bad advice. He's got to make this happen, because without it, without a presidential commission, we are going into the next election. Now, if President Trump wins, great. We'll have 4 years of no new regulations, and we can probably officially pull out of Paris, but everything, the framework, everything's still there for the next president who wants to re-regulate everything and go beyond what President Obama did.
See, that's always the problem. We get a conservative administration in there, and then they roll back a bunch of regulation, but they haven't changed the laws. So I always think of them, it's like they got dehydrated. So the next guy comes in, gets out the fire hose, waters them down, they're all back again.
Yeah, and let's go. Let me get on my real soapbox here. If you go back since the 19 teens, or at least 1930s, every presidential administration, no matter what rhetoric they use, has usually left the country further left than when they began.
Yep.
And let's go through it. You have FDR, who obvious reasons, Harry Truman continued FDR's legacies, and then the real tragedy. And I know many conservatives love Dwight Eisenhower. He actually ended up funding and solidifying the Green New Deal and all these welfare programs, and he did nothing to stop it. So he was part of the big, you know, corporate estate. Then you have John F. Kennedy, who came in briefly, but then Lyndon Johnson came up with the Great Society, and then President Nixon funded the Great Society and solidified all that. And then you had Jerry Ford, you had Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan's first term, you could argue, was a retrenchment in the first term, but by his second term, it was, you know, he was essentially managing what he had done and was just coasting. So by the end of his term, it was sort of a wash. He had already, all sorts of things had reversed. Reagan was arguing for gun control shortly after he left office.
And regionalism. He was doing that as governor of California, trying to regionalize California, which is part of a United Nations Agenda 21 goal.
The whole Bush. Yes, and that was, you know, probably the biggest mistake Ronald Reagan made was picking George H.W. Bush as his running mate in 1980. Then you had George H.W. Bush, and you can't say enough about how bad he was for everything. I mean, everything from taxes, regulations, to the environmental policy, to the Rio Earth Summit, the Agenda 21,
his New World Order,
for the everything. So then you go through the 8 years of Clinton, and actually you could argue that one of the most conservative periods next to Reagan's first term was Bill Clinton's second term, when he had a Republican House and Senate and a Democrat president, Bill Clinton. That partisanship sort of caused a great gridlock. We were all distracted with a sex scandal, Monica Lewinsky. That's a wonderful thing to happen in Washington. We had 75 cent a gallon gas here in Washington, D.C. We had balanced budgets. We had welfare reform. We had no real enemies. We had a, you know, pulling back. So it was actually a brief period there. And then, of course, George W. Bush comes in. He accepts the United Nations signs. He rubber stamps it all. He sends his delegations every year to all these conferences. I get sick listening to the Bush administration. They're giving all the lip service to the nonsense UN claims and just playing the little game of China and India, so we won't sign on. But George W. Bush couldn't have been more forceful in endorsing this.
Ramped up the National Defense Authorization Act for anyone talking about what they call conspiracy theory, like talking about United Nations Agenda 21, sustainable development.
We will erase you.
We will erase you, right? Yeah. And you could be considered a domestic terrorist and that's in the NDAA after 9/11. So anyway, go ahead, Mark. Just like to put
it
in.
Then, of course, you had 8 years of Obama, and then you had the Republicans campaigning on repeal Obamacare. Guess what? It never happened. At least not officially. They could never even get the votes for that. Maybe they didn't have enough votes. But either way, the point
is, House, but
now you're going to have people camp. If the Green New Deal passes in 2020, if a Democrat wins, you're going to have Republicans in 22 repeal the Green New Deal, and they're going to, they may even win on that, and then they're probably going to fall short again because of Lindsey Graham and Senator Romney. It's the cycle. But after all this cycle and all the fighting and all the back and forth, if you look at the big picture, we've continued to progress, central planning and drifting leftward. Other critiques of the Trump administration have been essentially that he just hasn't pulled the trigger enough. He could have pulled the United States out of the UN framework, which would have then potentially, and depending on how legal interpretations go, required a new treaty or a ratification of a treaty to get us back in, because it was all based on the original Rio Earth Summit Treaty in 1992, the whole UN framework, which led to the Kyoto Protocol and the Paris Agreement. So he didn't do that. Instead, he announced his intent. And Al Gore correctly points out at every speech he gives that President Trump has not pulled us out of Paris. It doesn't happen until after the next election in 2020 officially. And it could be easily reversed if that's the next president's wish. So that's the problem, is Republicans play this game, but they don't actually kill the beast or actually maim the beast. All they do is scare the beast away, and then it comes back and continues its march.
Nobody wants to be mean.
If for no other reason to vote for Trump, vote for Trump, because we do not want this Green New Deal. And I guarantee, if a Democrat wins, we are going to get the Green New Deal and then
some
forever and ever.
I want to be clear, though. Donald Trump is the greatest thing to happen to freedom since Ronald Reagan. There's no. First of all, if you compare, I never understood a conservative never Trumper. There might be a couple out there. I understand the mainstream and the liberal Republicans because they don't like someone.
Well, they get all jacked up about, oh, he's just not nice. Before we launch into this, hold on 5 seconds, and we'll do a really quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Mark Morano. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Listening to an encore presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back in April 21st of this year. Looking for a soul to take.
You're gonna see me coming by the selfish thing. Ain't so much of anything these days. Dear and the air. They're running out of rhinos. What do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Be running out of nothing. They know I do. It's casual entertainment. We ain't too afraid.
Am I partaking for what? How do you know the lyrics to all of these?
I love
it's
them.
Scary.
I love them.
I'm like frightened that
Dire Straits is the greatest. We just found out last night that Alabama did some kind of climate song. We didn't play it for you, Mark, but yeah. Ruined another artist for us. Can't watch any movie stars. Can't listen to any music.
Yeah.
It's depressing. We're down to Ray Stevens and Dire Straits. That's all we got left. Weird Al. Weird Al seems to be holding out. He's still offending people. So, God love him. Okay, so go. Let's kind of make this last chunk since I think some people really don't understand what Donald Trump is doing. They're caught up in the media craziness of, you know, he's not nice. He said something mean. He uses Twitter. He uses Twitter.
If he'd just shut up.
Yeah. Tell people exactly what he has done for them that they might actually like.
Well, first of all, he's the right president for the right time. I mean, what the most important thing President Donald Trump has done is he doesn't give a bleep, bleep, bleep of what the mainstream Republican Party inside Washington or anyone like that thinks. He just doesn't care. He's the first president I'm aware of in the last 50 years, even more so than Ronald Reagan. Because Ronald Reagan, if you remember, it sounds great and it's a history thing, but I actually, you know, was a volunteer in 1980 on his campaign. My brother worked in his administration. And I very closely followed that. I followed that administration. He was co-opted so many times by people like George Shultz and Donald Reagan. Maybe Donald Reagan was one of the bad ones, but he by the time end of his second term, he had been major wayward drifting. I remember conservative activists held a press conference and said Reagan, when he did the Reykjavik summit, you know, he went on the whole arms control thing, the nuclear-free world. I mean, I understand he was trying to bankrupt the Soviet Union, but signing that was all window dressing at the end. But anyway, what President Trump has done is he has beholden himself to the miners in West Virginia, to crowds in Kentucky, to Ohio crowds, to Michigan, to Wisconsin. These rallies he goes to, that's the only approval he seeks. And so for the first time in the modern era, we actually have a president who cares what the people who elected him want. And he just doesn't care what official Washington wants in any way, shape, or form. He's not subject to that kind of pressure. And that is why it is so refreshing. Even on climate, which, you know, I've done reports, Donald Trump is exactly right. You know, Donald Trump aces climate science on 60 Minutes interview. I mean, even just off the top of his head and rhetorically without even, like, studying the issue, he knows all the points. He quotes his uncle, who was a scientist, and he destroyed Leslie Stahl in that 60 Minutes interview. He's that good. He instinctively gets it. But beyond that, his insults are very important because, frankly, the way the media media treats him. I mean, Bushes were eaten alive by the media. Bushes were eaten alive by the Michael Moores and the CNNs, and they accepted it. Donald Trump's not going to accept it. He pushes back. He insults. He hurls it. It's fantastic. It's exactly what's needed. You could say he's mean. He's a bully. Well, he's dealing an uphill struggle against one of the most insane, nasty, mean bullies we've ever had in the form of the mainstream media. So he's exactly what's needed as president now. Now, does he make mistakes? Does he do things that you could wish you could take back on Twitter? Yeah, all the time. But that's part and parcel with what is going on here. He's just overall so refreshing in our lifetimes, Debbie and Aaron. I don't think we're going to ever have a president that brings a smile to our face or that rallies us on core issues of freedom and deregulation. And any other, there's just no way we're ever going to see a president like this again. And I include Mike Pence in that. Mike Pence, I don't know. If he would become president after Trump, he seems very muted, seeking a safe space. I just don't know how strong he's going to be to stand up. Because you have to to be a successful president for freedom today, you have to stand up to the Republican Party. You have to stand up to the media. You have to stand up to official Washington. You have to stand up typically many times to your own cabinet, to your own advisors. And that's what Donald Trump has been pretty much doing. I mean, the week he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement, the advice he was getting from Rex Tillerson, stay in. The advice he was getting from Rick Perry, stay in. The advice he was getting from Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, stay in the Paris Agreement. Actually, Bill O'Reilly may have been gone by then, or I can't remember. I think he was still on Fox, but right before Bill O'Reilly was on there. My point is, even people who identify as conservative were urging him to stay in, but Donald Trump knew that he could not go face a rally of 10,000 people in Michigan or Pennsylvania and not have pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. So he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. We are not going to find that in any president probably for the rest of our lifetime. And that is what is so amazing about this guy. Relish every minute we have him.
But don't forget that we're not out of the Paris Agreement yet until the 2020, the day after the 2020 U.S. presidential
and
election.
And even that, the next president can put us right back in 2024. So that's why I wish Donald Trump had gone further. He needs, and maybe he will at some point, but they need to pull us out of the framework, and we need to make null and void the Rio Earth Summit Treaty. There's so many things we could do to make this permanent.
Okay, so tell me this. So for people who don't follow these things, why is that so important? I mean, the discussion is largely circulated around it doesn't do anything anyway. So why should people care about that?
Well, we care about it for several reasons, because, first of all, we accept the UN climate reports. Then you get into judges. One of the reasons that we're in this mess, where we had President Obama able to do what he did through executive order, was because the Supreme Court had as its basis the United Nations climate science, EPA science, which is based on the UN, and national climate assessment. They look at this and they say, well, we should be able to regulate what humans exhale from our mouth, carbon dioxide, as they now pollutant under the Clean Air Act. And so justices vote that way. So the reason it's so important is to destroy both the scientific foundation of the UN reports and these UN climate reports is we have to get out of the whole process in order to reject it so that the law of the land, so to speak, will be that we don't accept that and that federal regulation, statute, judges will no longer have to follow and look at those for reasoning. And that's why I'm hoping a presidential pulling out of the UN and a presidential commission in tandem can actually hopefully achieve that. Now, the problem is the left is relentless, as you see with these lawsuits with kids on climate. I mean, some of the stuff is just insane. My favorite was the recent 60 Minutes, and I did a whole special on Climate Depot on this. A young teenage girl, maybe 12, 13, said that she put her ankle in global warming. And what does that mean? 60 Minutes thought, these kids aren't speaking gobbledygook. Yes, they are. She was talking about her house was flooded during heavy rain. She blamed the heavy rain on man-made global warming. And when she got out of bed that morning, her house had flooded, so she was up to her ankles in flood water. So she stepped in global warming before. She knows what it means to be
unreal.
A victim of global warming. 60 Minutes runs with this. This is the nonsense they teach. And I have a whole chapter in my book on this, on just the indoctrination of kids. It works. Kids are just completely... And here's another thing. parents used to worry, oh, I hate my son or daughter, I hate to send them off to a four-year liberal college. They'll come back liberals. They're going to be indoctrinated. Hey, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Kids 12, 13, 14 are being indoctrinated by social media now. And social media, as I've already mentioned, Google, YouTube now has the disclaimers on climate skeptics. Twitter has all kinds of accusations on manipulating, whether it's on abortion issue, on climate issue. Facebook, I had a video that has now over 10 million hits. I was the poster child that they used, saying, how could Facebook allow evil denier Mark Morano to have a Facebook video, 3-minute video of over 10 million views? They went after Mark Zuckerberg for allowing this. Climate activist, the guy who authored the 97% climate consensus, actually went after Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, and they started labeling him a climate denier. And this is how bad it's gotten. So 12, 13-year-olds, I had my daughter come home at age 14, Dad, did you see another black man was shot by a cop? I mean, she's getting all the alerts from social media, Instagram, all this stuff that's like that Black Lives Matter. That's the news view they're getting, and it's done in a snappy, exciting way. They're not watching CBS Evening News, or they're not getting this from liberal college professors because they're not in college. So the uphill battle we have to fight is so great and steep, you can't lose hope. But, you know, right now we have President Trump, and we have to relish every minute and make every minute count right now.
I always wonder if his tweets are kind of like chumming the water.
I do, too. It's like distraction.
Keeps all the sharks busy while they swim down below them. Because you look at it, it's kind of brilliant.
He distracts them so he can do
so we can go do stuff.
It's amazing that people actually don't think when he said he was a stable genius, I believed it. And people thought, oh, what an idiot. He's this. He is probably one of the most intelligent, strategic presidents we've ever elected.
I agree. I think he's playing chess versus checkers. And most people out there are playing political checkers. And he's like.
But you watch it. It's like, squirrel, and they run over there, and. Meanwhile, back at the farm, they're getting all this stuff done. But we have like a minute left. So in that, anything you want to promote?
Well, first of all, yes, a couple things. My book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, will be coming out with a new edition probably in the next 6 weeks or within 2 months. It's going to have a special update with the Green New Deal. It'll include a whole extra bonus chapter on that. That's coming out. We have a sequel to the movie that'll be coming out in 2019, Climate Hustle. Climate Hustle 2, Rise of the Climate Heretic, although it's not actually called. It's Climate Hustle 2, or we'll have working titles, but we're doing a sequel that's going to be on specifically the United Nations climate agenda and the whole climate movement. So the biggest thing I want to leave you with is the Green New Deal, even if you accept the United Nations and Al Gore's climate claims, setting aside the science for a minute, climatologist Pat Michaels ran the numbers using their own, the United Nations and EPA own numbers. You wouldn't even be able to tell a temperature difference 100 years from now. You wouldn't even be able to tell the emission difference 100 years from now. If the United States fully implemented the most expensive domestic policies, the Green New Deal in the history of our country, it wouldn't even have an impact. So the idea that you first want to look at cost benefit analysis. This
is we got to run, Mark.
Trojan horse.
We're hitting the news.
You're awesome, Mark.
We love you, Mark Morano. Gotta come back on
again.
Thank
you, Aaron.
You're a rock star.
Oh yeah.